All right, so just going over from yesterday, just quickly over the last sugya up to the two dots, but the Gemara there discussed Mavriyah Harim Nichzei Chaveiro. This concept that one is not accountable or culpable when it comes to chasing away Hezek from his friend. So the Gemara qualified that statement. When it talks about Mavriyah Harim Nichzei Chaveiro, the Gemara says, why isn't our case over here a case of Mavriyah Harim Nichzei Chaveiro? The Gemara says that we're missing elements here. We're missing important elements to make it into Mavriyah Harim Nechzei Chaveiro. Because either, number one is Midatohu. That's the first problem, is that in general, when we say Mavriyah Harim, Mavriyah is a case where he knows that he's helping out his friend. Over here, he's helping out without any foreknowledge that he is supposed to be helping out or that he is helping out. Number two, we said the difference here is the Itlei Pseido, that there is a loss that he's being incurring in order to help his friend out, which is not necessarily true in the regular case of Mavriyah Harim Nichzei Chaveiro. So the Tosus here discusses, and that's what I just want to spend a couple minutes on the Tosus over here, discusses another classic case which we've seen together, we saw this in the Gemara Ksubos and other places, is that a Poreach Chov L'Chaveiro, someone pays off a loan for his friend, is considered to be Mavriyah Harim Nichzei Chaveiro. So the Ri wants to know, what's the difference? Why over here, why when you pay off someone else's loan, that is considered to be Mavriyah Harim Nichzei Chaveiro, and then he doesn't have to pay you back. Whereas over here, where the animal, you save the animal, and it's by having your crops be damaged, over here, that's not considered Mavriyah Harim Nichzei Chaveiro. So if you look in the Tosfos, about three lines down, it's the second to last wide lines at the top, it says V'yesh Lomar at the top. It's three lines down in the Tosfos, V'yesh Lomar, dead center. V'yesh Lomar, Dahochi Perusha Mavriyah Harim Nichzei Chaveiro, Mida'ato. Right, that when it's Mavriyah Harim Nichzei Chaveiro must be Midato. That's the first qualification. It has to be with your knowledge. You need to know that you're actually helping your friend out, whatever the situation is that you're helping out in. But came into Midato, Afilu Itlei Pseido. Once you know about it, even if you incur a loss, then Kamo Pareach Chovo Chashiv Mavriyah Harim. It still qualifies or classified as Mavriyah Harim Nichzei Chaveiro. That's an important thing. So we, over here, one of the qualifications is Mavriyah Harim Nichzei Chaveiro, we said was Midato. That has to be with his knowledge. But when we say Midato, that doesn't mean that he needs Midato and also not to lose money, but it could be Midato and lose money. And that's the next line. If you skip down 2, 4, 5 lines in the Tosfos from where we are right now, it begins with Kevan. And that line, it says, later than the word Kevan, the second word on the line. It says the Kevan. The Ike Tarte. And our problem over here, in the case of the animal falling into the Gina, there's two problems. He says, Shalomi Dato, right? That's number one, Vitlay Pseido. And number two is that he's losing money. It's not one or the other, but it has both deficits. Now, number one is that it's not the guy who's saving him with his field doesn't know he's doing it. Number two, he's losing money in the meantime, and that he's losing money to save him. And therefore, it's not Mavriyah Harim. Aval, if you have one of these two factors, Mi Dato, Afilu Itlay Pseido. If he knows about it, even if he incurs a loss, then that's considered Mavriyah Harim. If he doesn't know about it, and he has no loss incurred here, then in both those instances, it's classified or qualified as Mavriyah Harim, and then he doesn't even pay him the schar or the money or the equivalent wage for someone who would have done this on his behalf. That's the Tosfos qualifies over here that the either one is sufficient. So we can say qualified as Mavriyah Harim is either you know about it, or, if you don't know about it, you're not losing any money on it. So those are the two qualifications for either one is sufficient to create a case of Mavriyah Harim. And the problem with our case in our Gemara over here is that he has both. He has a Shalomi Dato and there's Pseido. And therefore, it's not qualified as Mavriyah Harim. And then the Tosfos continues and just points out that in all these cases where we say he's Patur, meaning that like a Shomer Chinam is Patur. He does not have to go and chase a lion away. Right? So the Gemara says in other places that he's Patur from the damage of a lion. But if the Shomer Chinam does take action and decides to protect the property of the one he's watching, then he has the right to claim what's called Schar. He can ask for the additional Schar that he incurred in order to protect the animal. And when we say he's Patur from doing it, it doesn't mean that Patur and therefore he can't get reimbursed. Patur means he's not obligated to do it. But if he does do it, then he's entitled to get reimbursed because he wasn't obligated to do it, and he went and he incurred a seida to do it, and therefore, not Seda in the sense that he lost money, but the sense that he went out and did something that was beyond the call of duty. If it goes beyond the call of duty, then he's entitled to get nishlam, he's entitled to get paid the schar for that which he did. So that's the first part of Tosfos. The second part of Tosfos, which is important, is three lines down in the wide lines. In the wide lines in Tosfos, three lines down, it says the second word in the line, Venira Luri. It says Venira Luri, Dimavriach Ari, She'eno Notel Schar, that Mavriach Ari doesn't get paid for what he does. That's only, Hainu, Kesheina Dover Barur, she a devotee they have saved. That's only when it's unclear, however, what the outcome of the situation in front of us is. Kagong, She'ari Rachok, the lion's far off. So we're uncertain as to whether the lion will attack or not attack the herd of this that he's watching. In that case, he can't make any claim. We don't know if it'll eventually get here or not. Therefore, ain matzilo midaga. What he's doing over here is saving him from the worry that the lion might come. Umina pachad shedueg shemayavo. And from that fear that the lion might come. In that case, he cannot make any claim for compensation because he didn't do anything tangible. All he did was he created or he took care of an intangible issue, which is the fear of the individual or the fear that this animal might come and attack. On the other hand, davar barur, if it's clear that there will be loss incurred here, and the lion is right here, or he grabs it right out of the mouth of the lion, in that case, he can grab away, then he can take schar, he gets compensated for it. So the Re makes another distinction here, which is important. The distinction is about how in front of us is the nezek or the problem that is how imminent is the problem. If the problem is imminent and it's going to cause a pseida, so then he can make a claim for tzchar because he did something that otherwise would have been incurred a loss for the other person. He went beyond the call of duty and he did help them out and he saved him. In that case, he can say, listen, this is not just Mavriach Ari, this is Mavriach Ari, but I saved you in a way that you couldn't have done yourself or the animal would have been lost. So you have to pay me a schar for that. I'm obviously up to the value of the animal. To have him compensated more than the value of the animal doesn't make any sense, right? So he can claim schar up to the value of what he saves. But if it goes beyond that, then it doesn't make sense that he's paying him he's losing money. He'd rather lose the animal than have to pay schar to this individual. Now, on the other hand, if all he's doing is protecting him from the possibility of danger, then he has no claim of schar over there, because then it was not imminent, it was not obvious that there'd be damage to this individual, and therefore he can't make any claim for schar. Now, our case over here, that's what Tosfos continues with here. Tosfos says, what about our case over here? Now, shatap nar chamor chavero, and v'hach shmaitan, our case over here, Mayri, shitili rakot mitzar ba'alma. When the animal fell off the road here and landed on the vegetable patch, it wasn't that he was saving him from nezek. Because if he was saving him from Nezek, then he could make some claim for, right, he could make a claim for Tzar. But rather, what the phrase is that he's saving him from Tzar. He doesn't want the impact on the ground to hurt the animal, meaning be in pain. Even though the animal would not diminish in value. I mean, it's not doing anything of Nezek, it's not diminishing the value of the animal, but he's saving him from the pain. Therefore, if it had been with the knowledge of the Balas HaDeh, it would have been Mavriach Ari. The only reason it's not considered Mavriach Ari is because the owner of the Sadeh didn't know about it. Had he known about it, it would have been Mavriach Ari. Why would it have been Mavriach Ari? Because there's no imminent loss here. Why is there no imminent loss? Because there's no nezek to the animal. The only thing that's hurting the animal over here is the tzar. Right? And then the same thing here. Uporeya Chovo. What about Poreya Chovo of its friend? Ain matzilo mi hefsei. Those are this. Those are, he's not saving him from any loss. The mashaya boveza kukla faro. The love has to pay back the loan. Ain ze hefsei. That's not a loss. Harishik chayavlo. You're chayav to pay. The love is obligated to pay the mal for that money. You're not saving him from a loss. There is no loss here. The only thing that's an obligation on him that he must pay. And therefore, veinu matzilo mi tsar ba'alma. All he's doing is saving him from the pain of having to pay right now. He's deferring what would have been the payment that he needs to make now. And that's why it's qualified as Mavriach, or classified as Mavriach Ari. Tosfos offers another pshat or alternative why it's considered Mavriach Ari, is because he said maybe he would have forgiven me the loan. How do you know that I would have had to pay the loan? The Malvik could be forgive me, or I could get other people to be Mephias him, to push out the loan. That what you did not protect me from Hefseid. Right, so that's the two important points that came out of the read here. One is that to classify or qualify as Mavriach Ari, number one, it's enough if it's Midato, even if you lose money. And number two, it's enough if you don't lose money, even if it's low Midato. And the second thing that's requalified is that the only time you can make a claim for Tzchar is if the danger and the Nezek are imminent, right, and apparent. If that's not the case, then you don't have a right to claim for Tzchar. And that's what Tosfos explains. Our case over here of Yerakot, right, would have been a case of Mavriach Ari because it was only Tzchar, not Nezek. And the reason it doesn't work over here is because it's Shalom Midato. And that's the same thing with Pareah Chovo. Pareah Chovo, again, is not an imminent loss. Since it's not an imminent loss, therefore you can't make any claim of pay me back, because it's all about Mavriach Ari here. Whereas you're just either deferring the loan, you're not taking away a hefsed, there's no loss here. So all of those items make it Mavriach Ari. The last thing Tosfos deals with, which is a side issue, the last thing in this Tosfos is the issue of a property. If a non-Jew takes the property of a Jew and buys it, then we saw this earlier, right? This is the case of Sirik Turon, right? We saw this in Gittin, the Gemara in Gittin, about what the rights are to buy that property back from the Jew. I mean, that a Jew loses his property to a non-Jew, or to the government, and then a third-party Jew comes and buys the property back. What entitlement do I have to buy that property back from him? So the Ri over here says that you have a right to buy it back, and you have to pay him Ashehenno. The Hana that you gave to the individual, you have to pay for it. Meaning that now that it's in Jewish possession and it's easier for you to get it back, you have to compensate him for that hanoah that he provided you. You can't just go and take the property back. Right? And there's some interesting cases over here. My talk, he brings down cases in his time where the government, when Jews used to leave the city, they used to confiscate the property. And when they confiscated the property, the Reeve says that was against the halacha. It was against Dina de Malchusa. Because they see that in other places, that they don't take away the property when you leave the city, even if you're paying taxes or not paying taxes, and therefore when they took it, it was like stealing. And the government steals it, and therefore when a Jew buys it back from the government, he's actually enabling you to get your property back. So even though technically Minadin, he had no right, the non-Jew had no right to take it, and you should have been able to get it back, nevertheless, when the Jew brings it into his possession, that helps you out. And when it helps you out, you got to pay him for that hanah of getting the property back. All right, that's just a rough sketch of the Tosfos, just a little deeper look at Mavriach Arim Nichsei Chaver. Okay, now we're going to continue in the Gemara. All right, so the Gemara says, Yardar Kedarka Vezika Meshalemet Mashe Zika. And if it went down normally, right, the case before the two dots, right before the two dots, we discussed the case for Rav Kahano, a case where it fell in Ba'onet. When it falls in Ba'onet, he only plays Mashenenet. On the other hand, if he walks down, there's no onus for him to get into the field, and he shows up there, then he's going to pay Mashehezik, not just Mashehenenet. Now the Gemara says, "By Rabbi Yirmiyah, Yarda Kedarka, it goes down normally, Vezika b'meleida, and then it does damage with either it really gives birth, and all the other liquids that come out with the leida destroy the part of the property, or it miscarries and somehow destroys the property. Mau, leave it deman. The Amar Tchilato b'Shia Sofa Bonus Chayav Lo Tibaylach. There's no question. According to what it says, Tchilato b'shia, Sofa Bonus is chayav, you're chayav over here. What the b'shia is that you let your animal walk down to this guy's field. The onis is that it gave birth in the middle of the field. So you have Tchilato b'shia, Sofa Bonus is chayav. There's nothing to discuss over here. Ki tibayalach, the question comes up, Alamin da'am da'man da'amar, Tchilato b'shia v'sofa bonus, patur. According to him, that's patur. Mai, what's the din? Mi amrinan kevin de Tchilato b'shia v'sofa bonus, patur. Is that our case over here? Shia is that he walked down into the field. Ones is that it gave birth and ruined the field. So now you should be patur. Oh, Dilma Hacha Kula Pshia. Who, right, maybe over here the whole thing or the whole thing is a Pshia from beginning to sof. Why? The cave in the Kachazi the Krave Lada Melad. Since he sees that the animal is about to give birth, Ibala Lintura, he has to watch out. Vilistimure, right, Bigava. And he has to ensure, right, that the animal doesn't go out and dirty or soil or sully other items with the birth. So because of that, maybe, you know, when we say onis is something that should not have been anticipated by the owner. Over here, the birth should have been anticipated by the owner. Since it should have been anticipated by the owner, then maybe it's not an onis anymore, maybe it's a pshia. That's the question over here. Is it considered kula pshiahi, and therefore he'd be chayav? Or do you still qualify as a tchilato b'shia v'sof b'onis, and he would be patur, and the Gemara leaves that as a teku. Right now, we get to the last part of the Mishnah. The last part of the Mishnah discusses compensation. How do you compensate? We've discussed it earlier in the Gemara about this idea that you do not assess the actual damage that's done, but you assess it in the context of a larger area. That's what the Gemara says here. Maketzah Mishalemet Masha Hizika. Our Mishnah said that you do it agav sa'ah. Menahani Mili. How do you know that you don't assess the actual damage, but you look at it in the context of a greater area? The Gemara says, "Amarat no damakro vida b'steacher, lamech shamin agav steacher." So that's what you learn. The pasuk says, "Uvir b'steacher." We learn from that that the assessment is based on another field. What does it mean, another field? Right? It means the context of a larger area than what is damaged. Hayuvir b'steacher mi bayle lafuke rishut rabim. What do you mean? We need uvir b'steacher to teach us that shame for regular only chayav in the property of the nizak. They're not chayav in rishut rabim. That's what uvir b'steacher teaches us. The Gemara says, "Imkain listov rachmanu ubir b'stei chaveiro, inami stei acher." Right, my b'stei acher, sheshamin agav stei acher. Right, so that comes to teach you both in him. That teaches you that shemin agav stei acher. The Gemara says, "Ve'ema kuli lahochi udato." So let's say that that's what it comes to teach us, and you should be chayav in rishut rabim. It's coming to teach us about assessment has to be done agav a larger area, but when it comes to rishut rabim, you'll be chayav lafuki rishut rabim minalan. Should been written by Tashlumim. Why do I have this extra term of Bistei Acher? Why is it over by Bier? Tarte comes to teach you two things. So number one, the Bistei Acher aspect comes to teach you because it could have written Bistei Chavero, oh, Bistei Acher, not Bistei Acher. That comes to teach you that when you come to pay, you pay Agav, a larger area or a larger field. That's the first din. The second din that we learned that it's only in the area, the property of the Nizak, that you're chayav b'shen regel, not b'shut rabim. That comes from the placement of stei acher. Because if it had solely to do with tashlumim, to repayment, it should be included in the pasuk of meitav karmao, meitav seo, meitav karei shalim. The fact that it placed it in the beginning will be air by the part of the mazik or the nezik that's being done comes to teach you that there's an area of nezik that you're not chayav in. And where's that? That's when it's done in b'shut rabim and it's not a stei acher. So you learn both of those items out of ubir b'stei acher. Now the Gemara asks the basic question, heicha shaminan. How do we assess the value? The major machlokas here between Rashi and Tosafot. I'll explain it according to Rashi and then we'll go back and look at the Tosafot. So Rashi says, Am Rabbi Yosef bar Chanina sa'ah b'shishin sa'in. You do one sa'ah against 60 sa'ah. Rabbi Yana Amar tarkav b'shishim tarkivim. Right, so tarkav is 3 kav, which is half a sa'ah. So that means that you do a tarkav, you do half a sa'ah against 30 sa'ah. Chizki Amar kelach b'shishim klachim. You take a stalk to the 60th, meaning that 60 times the stalk. So you look in Rashi. Okay, Rashi over here explains his position. If you go to the Rashi right across, let me just see where it's the best way to see it in the Gemara. It's in this long Rashi here, Asav b'samach sa'in, if you go 2, 4, 5, 6 lines up from the bottom of that Rashi, it says, V'im tomar. So he says, over here, the Gemara gives a bunch of representations of what the assessment is. It's 60 times something. So the first debate is it's 60 sa'ah versus a sa'ah. Next one is it's 60 half sa'ah versus, 30 sa'in. And the other one is it's 60 times of a stalk. So what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah explicitly states how you assess it. It says you do it against a sa'ah. Right? The Mishnah says, Shamin beit sa'ah ba'oto sadeh. You assess what a beit sa'ah is in that field. So now, how do you reconcile between the Mishnah and what our Gemara says over here? That's what Rashi says. V'im tomar. Lama huskar beit sa'ah. What's the beit sa'ah mentioned in our Mishnah? Here, the Gemara is laying out how you assess it against a large area. What's the beit sa'ah in the Mishnah doing? So he says, Shema ya shamin mitchila aruga b'shishim sa'in. Kama yufim, kama hin yufim, lo ya mishalim klum. You won't pay anything because that field is so large. Shein karechet aruga ktana nikeret b'shishim sa'in. It wouldn't even be visible in shishim sa'in. Ma'avav b'beit sa'ah nikeret. So Rashi, what Rashi basically explains is that there's a two-tiered assessment over here. What do you do? You first have to determine, or what we're trying to determine is, what is the value of a sa'ah in this field? How do I determine what the value of a sa'ah is in this field? I look at a field of 60 sa'ah. When I look at a field of 60 sa'ah, then I can make a determination, divide that number by 60, and I know how much each sa'ah is worth. Then, once I have the value of a sa'ah, then I can look, within the context of that sa'ah, how much damage was done in this aruga. And the reason I have to do it in these different manners is, one, because if I just took it against the whole 60 sa'ah, the aruga, you wouldn't pay anything for it. You would think there's no damage. It'd be worthless, the damage. I mean, like, a big field like this, you're talking about like a couple of meters here, that's not valuable. Nobody would pay less for it. They can't assess it that way. On the other hand, if we just assess the damage itself where it's sitting, then you would overpay for it because someone would pay a lot of money for a small patch because that's all he can afford, and that's going to be his production. And same thing with just the sa'ah. If you just assess the sa'ah in isolation, that value of what you would pay for that is exceeds the true value of what a sa'ah is. So what I do is I do it in a two-tiered type of assessment. I do the first tier, which is I take 60 sa'ah, and I try to come up with a value for what is a single sa'ah worth. Once I have the value of what a single sa'ah is worth, then I look at the damage I've done in the context of that one sa'ah. That's Rashi's understanding of this machlokas here, plus the Mishnah, that we have a two-tiered assessment method. And Rashi, all the way through here, explains that if you make the field too small, then people will overpay for it, because only an ani would be the one who would want to buy it. Only an ani would buy a field that's small, and he'll overpay for it because that's all he can afford. On the other hand, if you make the field too big, then nobody's going to buy it. Only a very wealthy person buys it. So you have to make it big enough that it's valuable to someone to buy, even a big buyer. But on the other hand, you don't want to make it too big where it puts the people out of range. So you have to create this middle scenario. How do you do that? You create a 60 sa'ah field, then you assess the sa'ah, and then from the sa'ah, you look at the context of the damage. Right, that's Rashi's shot over here. Tosfos, on the other hand, says, doesn't understand what Rashi's saying over here. And one of the problems is in the Mishnah, right? Because in the Mishnah, it doesn't say, he says that the Mishnah writes, listen to this, it says, when you look at a Beit Sa'abo Sasadeh, Kama Haita Yafa, Kama Hi Yafa. Alright, so now, what does that suggest? That's in the Nekeva. Right, so what is that modifying in the Mishnah? If it's Lashon Nekeva, what is that modifying? Right, if it's talking about if the way Rashi learns it, right, what you're trying to assess here is how much the Sa'ah is worth. Right, if that's the case, it shouldn't be written in, right, it should not be worth written in the Lashon Nekeva. So look at that, re-ask this question over here. Two, three lines down in the Tosaf says Kasha the Ri. The last two words on the line. The Kasha the Ri. Dia Beit Sa'ah Koi. If the Mishnah is trying to find out what the value of the Beit Sa'ah is, Havalei Meimar, Kamahaya Yafeh, Vekamahu Yafeh, Belashon Zachar. Right, it should have said it in a male conjugation, the verb, because we're talking about a Beit Sa'ah. That we're trying to assess the value of a Beit Sa'ah. How do we determine the value of a Beit Sa'ah? We do a Sa'ah versus 60 Sa'ah. That's Rashi's explanation. It says, but the fact that the Mishnah itself formulates in the Nekeva, it looks like it's trying to assess how much the field was worth and how much is it worth now. They're not trying to assess how much a Beit Sa'ah is worth. They're trying to assess how much damage is done here. And so Tosfos disagrees with what Rashi says. And that he says, first of all, and if you skip down in Tosfos it's going to be hard to describe here. All right, you see where it says Meitav Sadeo in the Gemara? Meitav Sadeo, you can see the Pasuk Meitav Sadeo. If you go across to the right, and Tosfos says Vekasha. Right, it says in Rashi, Vekasha. Deheichan matzino shtei shumot halalo. Tebikralo ptivelo bisteyacher. Another problem with Rashi says there are two levels of assessment here. We go through two cycles of assessment. All the Pasuk says is Bi'er B'Se'acher, which offers you one additional assessment of a greater number. Where do you get double assessment of the value over here? So therefore, if you skip down in the Tosfos down to where the Aleph is, the Aleph of the Agosa Gra. If you go to the Aleph, he says Venira. Over there he says, Venira Lafarish, the Shaman Beit Sa'ah Dektani Hainu Beit Sa'ah Ne'echal, that's what it means in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is not telling you when you assess, what you have to do is you have to assess it against something in that field. All the Mishnah is telling us, it does not give us a size. It's not telling us the value or the amount. All it's telling you is that the damage done here should be assessed against this field itself. You don't go look at fields in general. You look at this field and the production of this field. The Mishnah, all it says is, it uses an example, Beit Sa'ah, but it's not giving you an exact measurement. All the Mishnah teaches us is you assess the value of damage here against the field that it's in. Now, how do you assess it in this field? That's what the Gemara is discussing right here. The Gemara is coming to tell us this. Tani b'seifa milsa de Rabbi Shimon, imsa imsa time sa time. Ufish lo perish mishtateno bekama shaminota. The Mishnah never tells us how much is the relevant or relative assessment done. El Shosa said this, shaminota. All it teaches is that you do it against this field. The farish b'gemara hecha shaminon. Right, and that's why. Right, what the Gemara is coming to teach us over here. So that's a very key machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi believes that the Mishnah gave already an assessment value, which is that you assess the damage against the Beit Sa'ah. And our Gemara is going to teach us how do you assess the value of the Beit Sa'ah itself, not of the damage. Tosfos says no, that we don't have this double layer of assessment. Rather, there's one assessment, and all the Mishnah taught us is that you assess the damage against this field itself. how much of this field, that's what the Gemara is coming to teach us, the relative value of the field was 60 times, you know, 60 sa'ah, or 30 sa'ah, or 60 times the amount that was damaged. All right, so those are Makokas, Rashi, and Tosis. Now back into the Gemara. So it says, Meitave, Ochlo kav o kabayim. The animal eats a kav or kabayim. Ein omrim tishalem d'mehem. You don't say, go pay the amount of a kav or kabayim. El roi notak yilu hi aruga ktana. Look at it as it's a part of a small field. It's a small. Umisharin otan. And then we assess it. So my lav bifnei atzma. So it sounds like, it's a, really a question in all the opinions over here. So it sounds like you just take a little patch and you look at the damage in the context of a little patch. But it doesn't give you this 60 times. You know, nobody asks you to look at it as a multiple of a larger area. So my lav bifnei atzma sounds like you just assess that area by itself. Lo, b'shishin, no. The Gemara says no. But it means you take a look at it. You look at it in the context of 60. And 60 will mean different things for each of the different opinions over here. Right? Each one according to their own 60 value. Tan Rabbanan. Ein shamim kav bifnei shemash picho. We don't set the kav itself because that level raises the level of the damage and the mazik will have to pay more money. Velo beit kur. We don't assess it against the beit kur, very, very large area. Mifnei shepogmo. Because on the other hand, that'll hurt the nizak because you're assessing it against such a large area that the amount of damage done in this small area will be worthless. So my kamar, what does he mean? So I'm Rabbi Yochi kamar. Ein shamim kav bishishim kavim. We don't do kav against 60 kav. Mifnei shemash biach mazik. Because then you help out the, in the end, you end up, right, making it more expensive for the mazik. Now, you don't below kor b'shishim kor b'fnei shebogei mazik. Right, so in that case, you hurt the, meaning that you hurt the mazik, right, because if you have a huge area like this, right, and you're, you know, it's worth so much money, right, and then you look at it in the context of losing a core is a massive area. If you don't look at it against losing a whole core against Tishim Kurin, because that's a vast area. If that's a vast area that you've lost, it's obvious that that damage, right, is so big that the Mazik is going to have to overpay for it. On the other hand, you don't look at a Kav versus 60 Kav, because a Kav is such a small amount that you're helping out the Mazik, because he doesn't have to pay very much for it. Now, Matki V'lo Ravuna Bar Manoch. Hi V'lo Beit Kur. It doesn't say not a Beit Kur. V'lo Kur Mi Vayilich. Right, according to what you're explaining, it shouldn't say the way the Ain't Shamim Kav Mifnei Shebashbicho V'lo Beit Kur Mifnei Shepogmo. It should read Ain't Shamim Kav Mifnei Shebashbicho V'lo Kur Mifnei Shepogmo. We're not saying about a Kur and a Kav. It says Beit Kur. El Amar Rav Huna Bar Manoach Mishmei Rav Acha Breid Rav Ika Hachik Tani. This is what it means. Ain't Shamim Kav Mifnei Atzmo Mifnei Shebashbiach Nizak. Now it's the other way around. We don't look at the kav by itself because then you help the nizak, the kav, the damage itself, not in the context of the large area, but you don't look at the kav itself because then you help out the nizak, because if someone looks just at that little kav in its own context, without a relative context, you're going to exceed the value itself, you're going to make the nezek value be go up. The low kav of beit kur, and don't look at a kav in the context of a huge beit kur, because then you hurt the nizak. Why? Because a kav is such a tiny measurement in the context of such a large area of a beit kur, nobody's going to subtract any value for it. Nobody's going to say, well, I'll pay, you know, hundreds of dollars more or thousands of dollars more for that little patch that got damaged. So we'll use 60 as a relative basis, and the relative basis will allow us to give balance between the interests of the mazik and the interests of the nizak. So we know from the pasuk that you do a bir b'stei acher, that you have to do a relative assessment. How do you do the relative assessment? That the Gemara feels that at 60 times, that gives is a balanced view of the relative assessment, does not hurt the mazik, and does not hurt the nizak. There's a some sort of balance of relative value versus the absolute value of the nezik done in its own context. So how gabra? So we had an individual, this gentleman, the katz kisba mechavre. He cut down a kisba of his friend. Now what is this? What exactly this kisba is? Is it sounds like it's a dekel, some sort of palm tree. Cut down a palm tree of his friend. Some people explain, the Aruch explains that it was a Persian palm tree. But either way, it was some sort of palm tree that he destroyed of his friend. After the coming of the Reish Galuta, he went to the Reish Galuta to get compensated for the tree that his friend had cut down. Or Malay the Didi Chazili, Vatalata Ta'alta Bikina, Hava Kaime. Right, so I know, the Reish Galuta says, I saw this palm tree. And it was an area that had three palm trees together. And the area with the three palm trees in it is worth 100 zuz. Right, Pasa Tilto. So go give him 33 and one third zuz. Right, go pay him 33 and a third because you cut down one of the three trees that were equal to 100 zuz. So you should pay him a third of the value. Amar Gabe Resh Galuta, the dying zinin part. So Lomali, the person, the mazik goes and says, what am I doing here? You're going to do the din of the Persians, right? Do the din wrong. Why should I listen to you, the Resh Galuta? Why? Because what did the Resh Galuta do? He basically assessed the value of the item without giving it a relative context. He didn't look in relationship to 60 times. He just looked at it. He says, three trees, 100 was this field. Now you pay a third of that field. Now, after the Kamei to Rav Nachman, Amalei B'Shishim, they went to Rav Nachman and says, no, you got to assess it against 60 times that amount. So you take 60 times the dekel, if you have 60 the kalim in that area, then you take what's one dekel cost out of that 60? How do you assess the one in the context of 60? So Amalei Ravo, Imam Ruben Niske Memono, Yom Ruben Niske Gufo. Wait a minute. This din of relative assessment only applies to where? We know, where's the din of relative Obir Seracher come? It comes from the din of Shane and Regel. Shane and Regel are talking about what? Shane and Regel are talking about his mamon going out and doing damage. That's not talking about the individual personally going out and doing damage. So this idea of Obir Seracher, of doing relative assessment, is only relevant, is only true when we're talking about his mamon going out and damaging. But when it comes to Nizke Gufo, who says that's true? So Amalei Abai the Rava. The Nizke Gufo Madatech. It says, what's your opinion? Your belief is by Nizke Gufo, you do not need to do this relative assessment. The Tanya, we have a Braisa. A Mavkir Kamo Shel Chaveiro. Someone who goes ahead and is Mavkir. Mavkir over here means he destroys. Alright? It's Mavkir, I think, from the word Bechor, but he goes before its time, he comes and cuts it down. He destroys the vineyard of his friend. Smadar, if it was a Smadar, I mean, it was at the point of time that they were just beginning to bud, or the fruits were just beginning to come. Right then, going to Kamaita Yafek Kodim Lachain. Become he Yafel Achramikain. I look at it. How much was the field worth before the guy came and did the damage? And how much is the field worth now after he did the damage? Vilu Bishishim Loktani. And it does not say 60 times. So now, right, so that based on that, you're saying, Rava, this is your source. That's what Abai is saying. Rava, is this your source? Who did the damage here? The person himself. He went and destroyed a vineyard. In this case, how does the price say you assess the vineyard? Vineyard says, he just, look, how much was it worth before? How much is it worth now? We don't see any relative assessment over here. We don't see any, you know, what is it worth 60 times this amount? Is that Rava? Is this where you get your opinion from? That by Nizke Mamono it says, V'er V'seacher, so we do it relative to the entirety of the field, meaning relative to 60 times the amount. When it comes to Nizke Gufo, we don't do that. And I have a Braisa that shows you that. When he destroys the vineyard, we just look at the value before, the value afterwards. We don't do any of this 60 times stuff. He says, well, is that why? If that's the case, right, Atu Gabi Behemto Nami Milo Tanya Ki Hai Gavna. We have a Braisa that says the exact same thing by Behema. What is that? The Tanya. We have a Braisa that says Kitma Nitiya. If he cut down, right, he cut off or undermined or uprooted a sapling, right, or a plant or a tree of some sort. Rabbi Yossi Omer goes Gezerot Shivushalayim Orim Nitiya Bachnata Shtei Kesef. And if he took a sapling that was 2 years old. Right, 1 year old, he pays 2 kesef. Bachteshen, if it's 2 years old, he pays 4 kesef. All right, achlo chaziz, and then if he went ahead and ate it up or destroyed it when it was still shachat, when the tvua was just coming up, beginning to come up. I mean, it wasn't fully grown, but it could have been used for feed. Rabbi Yosef Gliomer nidon b'mishuyar shibo. We look at what's left. Whatever he destroyed in the field, we look at what's left in the field and see how much that's worth. I mean that. When it goes at the time of the harvest, we look, what was the value of this at the time of the harvest, that which survived his destruction over here? And then we go back and say, listen, had this grown to full capacity or full growth, it would have been worth what the rest of the field is fetching. So now you got to pay me the value of what you destroyed over here. I think, Shaul, if you remember, this was an idea that you had a long time ago when we talked about Bir B'Seacher, that the idea should be, I should assess, if I destroy a piece of value, I'm not looking at how much I destroyed in the context of a larger field. I'm looking, I could have grown fruits or vegetables here, and now that I can't grow them here, let me look at what the total value of the fruits and vegetables are. And so now that's what the Gemara is doing over here. The Braisa here suggests that you look at it right in the context of the chaziz. I think I took it out before it was finished. I wait to see what the rest of the field is worth when it's finished, and then I pay what it would have been worth when it was finished. Rabbi Yossi Galili Omer Nidon Mishayir Shabbos Mechamim Orim Orimina Ta Kama Haita Yafeh The Kamehi Yafe. As I'm saying, we don't look at what the final or what the Katsir will bring. We just look at it. What was the field worth before? What's the field worth now? And that will give us the assessed value of the difference between them. Achla smadar. On the other hand, if he eats a smadar, right, he took away in a vineyard. He went in and he cut the grapes. He took, picked the grapes, destroyed the grapes when they were still in their infancy. Rabbi Yoshua me royata ki ilhena navim omdoti bater. We look at it as if these are grapes that are finished, right? And then we say, how much is the value of the grapes once they're finished? And then he has to pay them that final value for what he destroyed. Kamei modim, royata kamei tayafa. Kamei yafa. Well, how much was it worth beforehand, and how much is it worth now? Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda omer mishum Rabbi Shimon b'med dvar memorim. When is that the case? Manch achla lulvei gifanim. V'yichorei teinim. That's only if he ate, right, the eshkolot, meaning that he already ate these grapes themselves, the bunches of grapes themselves, or that he, and that they were visible already, the bunches. And not the flowers, but we ate them, or the lulav. And that he ate the, when you're talking about the teinim, when the dates already, where there was already a shoot that was already part of the fruit. But if he already eats the pagim, or the boser, which are the initial levels of the fruit, then we see how much these umdot libatser uktani, alright, that how much they would be in the end, how much would the final value be. So here he differentiates between when you do destruction. Right, so if you do it early enough that there's no fruit at all on the tree, then you look at the relative assessment of the field. How much is it worth now? How much is it worth in the future? If it's already begun to fruit, meaning that the fruit already has taken shape on the vine, then you have to look at how much it would be worth at harvest, and you come back and assess and say, look, at harvest this is what it's worth. You have to pay me now what you destroy because it can't reach that level of harvest. Now, Ktani Miha, nevertheless, this is the whole proof. This is what Abai is saying to reject Rava's opinion. They look at a relative assessment. Now, over here, we're talking about an animal going in and destroying. This isn't when a human being goes in and destroys. The first price we brought down was talking about a human destroying. Now we're talking about behemoth that excessed the sechavero, that went into his friend's field, and it did destruction. Here we're talking about mamona mazik, and yet the chamim say it's all about what the value was before and afterwards. We don't look at this relative 60 times. See? Lo tani b'shishim. It doesn't say 60 times. And then we know clearly the din is you have to have shishim. What do you have to say? Bishishim. That when they mean, how much is it worth now, how much is it worth beforehand, they mean in a context of 60 times. So you can say it's the same thing by the brisa before that you brought to make your point to prove it, Rabba. I can show you that the fact that it's lacking the word shishim in the brisa is not evidence that there's no need for shishim. Why? Because I just brought you two brisos. One brisa that talks about nizke gufo, talks about a person doing damage. A second brisa that talks about mamano doing damage. And in both brisos, the word shishim is missing. And we know by behema, for sure, you have to do it b'shishim, because that's the din of bir b'steyacher. So the fact that it's lacking from the brisa doesn't mean that you don't need it. Because we're clearly going to have to read shishim into the brisa about behema. So just like you read it into that brisa, you could equally read it into the brisa of gufo, when he does damage by himself. And that will not be a proof to you that gufo is different than mimono. And so based on that, according to Abaye, what the Reish Galuta did was not correct, because it should have been done in the context of 60 times. Whereas Rava believed that maybe with the Reish Galuta it was okay, because it was Nitzke Gufo. If it's Nitzke Gufo, then you wouldn't need a 60 times assessment. You just look at the relative assessment, what the field was worth beforehand and what it's worth afterwards. Just to end off over here, Tosfos mentions over here that there's difference in types of fields when you assess, when you wait until the Batzer, until the harvest. He said that when you have certain fields, like vineyards. When you talk about vineyards, there's a possibility that some grapes won't make it, and other parts of the grapes will make it. I mean, the vineyards are very, fussy in that sense, that you'll have a certain tree or a certain vine that will not produce any grapes, yet a vine right next to it will produce grapes. And since they're finicky in that way, you can say, I can look at how much of what would happen to the rest of the field, and when it survives, then I can look and say how much it's worth versus this. That is not true necessarily by Tvua. He says that when it comes to a field of grain, in a grain field, we look at it, part of it got destroyed, the whole thing would have gotten destroyed. So therefore you have to look at the mishuyar. So that's why, if you look back, remember in the case of tvua, they said, look at what's left. Look at the mishuyar. What's left over of the tvua, you go assess how it grew, and then you say how much I have to pay. Why? Because if that grain didn't survive, then the grain that I killed or destroyed wouldn't have survived either. that they wouldn't have survived. I don't have to pay for it. I only have to pay with what you got or get it, got for the other grains. Whereas by grapes, we don't care what the other grapes do. Because it could be a possibility that the other grapes are destroyed, and your grapes would have made it. The grapes that you destroyed would have made it, because there is such differentiation in a vineyard. Therefore, we just look, how much is a grape at the time of ripening it, when it's ripe, how much is it worth? Not in the context of this field, but rather, how much is a grape worth? And when a grape is worth at harvest, you're going to have to pay for it, no matter what happened to the rest of this vineyard. That also differentiates between the lashon by the vineyard and the lashon by tevuah. Okay, we'll stop over here.